Welcome to Game On with Grace, where we're not just talking cricket wins and losses, we're talking off-field antics, guilty pleasures, and the drive that never quits. Hi everyone, I'm Grace Hayden, and today we've got one of cricket's most electric openers, a player who brings equal parts swagger and precision to the crease. From back-to-back T20 international hundreds and a World Cup win to massive performances in the IPL and Abu Dhabi T10, Phil Salt has carved his name into modern cricket with fearless batting and unmistakable confidence. Born in Wales, partly raised in Barbados, representing England and now playing for the UAE Bulls in Abu Dhabi. Phil's story spans across continents, clubs, and some serious cultural mashups. I cannot wait to get into this. Game on. Phil, welcome to Game On with Grace. So stoked to have you on. I know you're in Abu Dhabi right now, about to start the tournament over there. But how are you? What time is it in the world where you are right now?
I'm good, thanks. It's 1:25 in the afternoon, so pretty good time for me. I know it's a little bit later where you are, but I'm happy with the timing.
Perfect. Time for a bit of a chat. Now, have you been to Abu Dhabi before? Is this your first time in the tournament, or been a few years?
No, I've been a few times now, probably 4 or 5 times. It's always somewhere that I try to get to. People might not necessarily think that with the T10, but I love the format and I love playing it, and it helps it's in Abu Dhabi as well.
Absolutely. Not a bad place to play a bit of cricket, hey?
Yeah, no, it's brilliant. I do like it over here, and I'm looking forward to what should be a good 2 weeks.
Now, we'd like to start the podcast with a little bit of fun, a few random sporadic questions. Are you ready?
Yep.
Athletes are very competitive people. We all know that. How have you been competitive outside of the sporting field, though? Have you got siblings with your kids, with your family? Are you known to be a bit of a competitive person off the field?
Yeah, I it's quite funny you say that, because my mates are easily the most competitive person. I don't let things go very easily, you know, even if it's table tennis or playing two-time. There was a holiday, like a mate's holiday we all went on, and it got pretty fiery over a game of two-touch over a swimming pool, which I don't know quite how you create that dynamic. Yeah, it happened. So, yeah, generally quite competitive with everything I do. Bar golf, where, you know, I'm not one of the better players. But when I do win that, it's a great day.
What is it with cricketers and being so competitive with golf? I feel like because that's your like time off from the cricket field, you're always on the golf course when you're away from the sport. But I swear to God, it's like you're playing cricket on the golf course between the lot of you.
Yeah, the thing is with the golf, there's normally something on it, which is, again, normally dictated by the better golfers of the group. So you'll start the round and they'll go, oh, what's this for, a shirt or a head cover or something like that. So normally before you've hit a ball, there's, you know, the stakes are up there. Some of the courses we play as well, the I think the boys are pretty zoned in on getting themselves a shirt. So there's normally something on it early doors, and then it all goes south from then, usually.
Have you had a favourite course you've ever played on?
Yeah, we were really lucky a few weeks ago on the Ireland tour to play Royal County Down. That was easily, you know, up there with experiences for me. So we're pretty lucky generally, the places we tour, and some of the guys are very well connected. So we are spoiled in that department.
Is there a family member, friend, teammate that you hate losing to?
Oh God, all of them. But you know, I grew up with an older brother. He's about 7 years older than me. So you can imagine the wins were hard to come by in anything we did. When I was a bit younger. So beating him at anything, there was a sort of turning point where I'd start winning at, you know, table tennis or Never at pool, really. That was sort of his game. But when I started winning at table tennis and things like that, and when he couldn't get me out in the nets, or, you know, when I start scoring past him at football, you know, I don't know if he hated it more than I enjoyed it. But
yeah, fair. I mean, brotherly love teaches you a lot, I guess. I've got two younger brothers, so I definitely know what you're talking about. Being the oldest, though, and the girl, it's always unfair. They always seem to win, but I'm ultra competitive as well. Let's get into the main part of the podcast. This is called Human Behind the Heart. We sort of explore you behind all the stats off the field. So is there anything other than cricket growing up that you thought maybe might take over as your career path, or was it always cricket that you had in the forefront of your mind?
It was always football growing up, but then obviously moving away, I moved to Barbados when, you know, sort of teenage years. And then, you know, there wasn't so much of the opportunity to play sort of good level of football. And I was, you got to bear in mind as well, you know, athletically, I wasn't up there. You know, I wasn't the strongest and quickest in North Wales. So I definitely wasn't going to be in Barbados. You know, everybody seemed a foot taller and a lot faster than me. So cricket sort of took over then. And, you know, from that point onwards, it was head down with my cricket, I suppose.
What was it like moving from Wales to then live in Barbados? Did you find it a bit of a challenge at first, or did you always love it?
Do you know, I always loved it. I'm the sort of person, you know, from a young age, you know, I just sort of throw myself in head first. And that's what I did. And to be honest with you, I loved, you know, every moment of that. It's probably my favorite place to go, and especially to tour. I love going back there. So, yeah, I honestly, it was a really, really good thing for me, I think.
And then when you moved back, what was that transition like? Was it pretty different to living the life in the Caribbean to then back home? Some would say gloomy.
It was certainly very different. The amount of layers, I don't think I'd felt cold like it, to be quite honest with you. There were some times I was playing like rugby at school, and you know, you can't feel your feet and you can't feel your hands. And as much as I loved playing rugby, I was thinking, what am I doing here? Like, this isn't it. Of all the things I could be up to right now, this isn't the one.
For sure. And then when you decided to really take cricket on as a career path, was there anyone that really pushed you in that direction, or was it you kind of all guns blazing going, yep, this is for me?
I think probably the school I went to, I was quite lucky. I got off a scholarship, and there's a guy called Keith Medlicott who was in charge of the cricket there. And, you know, he really helped me drive that. Any sort of free time I had, whether it was early morning or, you know, if I had free periods, you know, I wasn't supposed to be doing it, but he'd always sort me out, you know, with a gap student to feed the balls, or if he was free, he would help me out. And he's probably the one that made me realise that, you know, it could be an option. At that point in time, I was trying to get into the Surrey setup and couldn't get in, and he sort of kept driving me, and he got me an opportunity down at Sussex. So I'd say he would be the person that sort of helped me the most.
100%. And when was that I've made it moment in cricket for you?
Oh God, I don't think there ever was one. It's just not the way I'm wired up. You know, I'd say I'm pretty good at cutting things loose, good or bad. And I think I've always been like that. You know, if I have a good day, you know, you enjoy it for a day and then it's gone. Same with a bad day. So I've always been pretty good at cutting it loose. You know, maybe one day it'll be nice to look back, or maybe I'll have more clarity around that moment. Yeah. But for now, I'm just enjoying the ride.
Absolutely. And you've got a new bub that's come into the world. How exciting. Are you enjoying being a dad?
Yeah, I'm loving it. It's obviously different. You know, it's really, really enjoyable, but it's also not without its challenges. So yeah, I'm loving it. Trying to spend as much time as possible with him, which is, you know, obviously a little bit of a challenge with, you know, our schedule and where we are in the world. But no, I'm really, really enjoying that. Thanks.
How do you balance, you know, making sure you're there for your family, but then also you've got a job to do at the end of the day, which isn't the most low pressure job in the world? How do you really balance that aspect?
Oh, that's the age old question. You know, everybody seems to do it differently. I'm not even sure where I sit on the scale, to be honest, but I just try to, you know, enjoy it as best I can and be as present as possible, you know, when I'm away from cricket. And you know, obviously when I go back to cricket, I find it a little bit easier to switch on now, probably. With the time away from the game, I think that really helps. And obviously it's always a change in perspective, isn't it? You know, when these things happen, and yeah, it's just, you know, I was a cricketer before, and now
You're
I'm
still one now.
Yeah, I'm still one now, but I'm a dad first, so
yeah,
I'm really enjoying that.
Do you think it eases the pressure knowing that you are a dad first rather than a cricketer, or is it still more of a pressure?
I'd say the game's still, yeah, exactly the same for me. It probably balances things out a little bit more. Like if you were to have a bad day, you know, knowing that he probably wouldn't necessarily care. He just wants his dad around. Then also, if you have a good day, he's still going to be up in the middle of the night, and again, he still doesn't care. So it's a bit of a
grounded.
Yeah, exactly that.
I love it. You know, you travel the world for this crazy job of cricket, especially being a T20 player on the circuit, well and truly. How do you really keep yourself grounded outside of family, but doing things for yourself to sort of take away that pressure as much as you can and kind of find balance and a new routine when you're not at home? Because, you know, the year is filled with so much travel and time away and new hotel rooms and you know, new training facilities, new teams that you're playing for that you might not have before. How do you really balance life out?
I think the biggest thing for me personally would be the routine. I think it's massive for myself to get into a routine as quickly as possible when I'm away. I feel like that makes things, you know, a lot easier and a lot more repeatable. I think, you know, just taking care of yourself is a massive one. Getting out and about, going for a coffee with your mates. You know, I've been pretty lucky recently that most teams I've played in, I've had some solid mates in, so that always helps. And then just it's a bit cliche, but just taking care of yourself, going to the gym, making sure that, you know, you're not stagnating, and that sort of a thing. I think that's about as much as you can do, because you're surrounded by change all the time. You know, the things that you can sort of keep constant, you want to keep them constant for you know, both your cricket, but also just your headspace when you're on the road.
Totally. Are you a big music guy?
Yeah, I do like my music. Yeah.
Yeah. Are you listening to it on the bus, or are you on the ground? Like, what's your music routine? Are you listening it to settle down? Because everyone says that, like, the adrenaline that you have when you play a game, it's so hard to like shut off after a game.
Yeah, it can be. Normally, you know, when I'm away by myself, I will have music on at all times. You know, there's the odd morning where, you know, I like a bit of quiet, but normally, I'd say for myself, you know, the first thing I do when I wake up is put the speaker on, just have a bit of background noise. And then with the games, it depends who I'm sat next to on the bus. You know, I've got big Timmy David out here, and, you know, I don't think I'm going to put my AirPods in when I'm around him, because he's normally coming out with something funny. So I don't think I'll need them.
You're staying tuned for the Tim David show. That's so fun.
Yeah.
Love it. Okay, we're going to step away for a quick break. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Phil soon. I wanted to get into some cricket stuff now, though. You've been part of lots of IPLs, but the last two have been ultra successful for you. 2024 was KKR, and then you got picked up by RCB. And you won with them and it was the first time for them playing with Virat Kohli and the rest of it. Talk me through both experiences. I'm sure they would have been very different wins, but let's start with 2024.
2024 was brilliant because, you know, obviously the auction came round and that, you know, I went unsold, which was a surprise to me at the time. But, you know, I was on an England tour at the time. So, you know, that was my priority, which was, I think it was quite good, really, to have that, not distraction, but, you know, regardless of how that day went, you know, I was still playing a game for England on it. So I didn't get too sucked into that. And then obviously the opportunity came up to go to KKR. And I can't speak highly enough of, you know, the setup there, especially having Gauti. That was brilliant. You know, it's probably, I've been really spoiled in the last couple of years. You know, the two head coaches I've had, Gambier and Andy Flower, I've connected with them really well. And I think, you know, they were very good at getting the best out of me. And then obviously to go along and to win in 2024, was brilliant. I was so disappointed that I couldn't be a part of, you know, the final, after, you know, putting all that work in and, you know, winning those games and also riding out the lows with that group. That was a really special year. But no, that was a great experience.
And then 2025, you got picked up by RCB and had an amazing win there. Talk me through the final.
The final was one of the strange days because I only got into the hotel probably about 4 or 5 a.m. something like that, on the day of the final. So I was straight to bed, and then I sort of remember because obviously, you know, you just come off a long call flight and the 24 hours leading into that was a bit manic. I remember just opening the curtains and I was well up there on, you know, floor 20 something of the hotel. And I opened the curtains and I looked down and I just saw this sea of RCB fans, you know, and it would have been, you know, 2 or 3 in the afternoon. People weren't even close to going to the ground, but they were already outside the hotel. I remember thinking, oh, shit, this is on. This is actually about to happen.
I'm not hallucinating.
yeah, which was... You know, obviously waking up after all that in India, I was struggling to ask, where am I?
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah, and then seeing that made it all very real, very quick. And then it was just excitement. I don't remember too much of the game. Normally I'm really good at that. But I sort of think the maybe a little bit of lack of sleep. I think
might have worked in your favour.
Yeah, it could well have done. But I don't remember too much of the game until, you know, sort of every game gets to a point where you're looking at the scoreboard and looking at runs needed off balls left and you're sort of making deals of thinking, right, if this over goes for 8 or 6, you know, what does that look like? Or if this is a big over, what does that look like? And you're sort of doing quick maths in your head looking at the scoreboard. But I sort of remember just sort of snapping into reality when Hoff was bowling, I realised that if he keeps his foot behind the line, we've won it. And that was a great feeling.
Yeah, absolutely. And playing alongside the king, Virat Kohli, I mean, he's such a legend in India, but all around the world. I mean, was that cool to win a final with him?
Yeah, it was, to be honest. I got on really, really well with Virat. But, you know, playing against him, that's all I had to go off in the past. Obviously he's a fiery competitor, but you know, he's competitive in certain things as well off the pitch, but he's just proper chilled guy, hangs out, loves talking smack with the boys, you know, he's one of us, and that was really cool to have, you know, to have him as a teammate and an opening partner. But also there was a sense of, you know, sort of responsibility from the guys that were new to that group, that, you know, in the 18th year of the IPL, you know, it was almost meant to be, and we were going to make it happen. And, you know, it's very proud and really cool that, you know, we get to say, yeah, we did that. We were the ones that broke the duck, and you know, we did that for all these loyal RCB fans because they're so well supported.
Yeah, they really are. Hey, it's a cult. But that's with every team, honestly. It's so cool. Like when you go to Chennai and there's the whistles, or it's just Mumbai and it's the blue sea. It's an unbelievable event to witness, let alone, I'm sure, play in. What is it that you love about playing in the IPL?
It's just the passion in India, I think, full stop. You know, even when you go on an international tour there, you know, the cricket is always good. The crowds are always good. You know, we got beat quite convincingly in Mumbai, I remember one game, but the crowd, you know, it's a surreal experience. And I'm honestly not sure you get that in any other sport. When the crowd get up like that in, you know, places like Bangalore and Mumbai, it's completely different to, I think, anything you've ever played in front of or seen. I've been lucky enough to say I've been to some cool sporting events. I don't think the crowd compares, to be quite honest.
No, definitely not. I totally agree. But how interesting is it that every city that you go to and play in, their fan is entirely different? They're all so passionate, but like it's that different kind of energy in every city that you go to.
Yeah, exactly that. And I don't know how else to describe it otherwise than it is a completely different experience everywhere you go. You know, it's not, there's no like sort of cut and paste, you know, fan base. That everywhere is completely different. And it's honestly, it's such a privilege as a player to go to these places and play in front of these crowds, you know, in what is the best league in the world. I can't speak highly enough of it.
Is that your answer? It's your favorite tournament in the calendar?
Yeah, it would have to be for me. You know, obviously World Cups are a different beast.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, that's something that happens every year. I think the IPL is pretty hard to get away from. It's the best standard of cricket, in the best grounds, with, you know, the best sort of fan bases and crowds. You know, I think it's pretty hard to get away from that.
Let's talk about you playing for your country now. When you debuted, when was that, and what was the experience really like? Were you still as cool, calm and collected as you are now, or is that something that you've really like learnt along the way?
I think that was Barbados, I think T20 debut. I think I had to be pretty calm on that day because I don't think I was supposed to be playing. I got the call early afternoon in Barbados that I was in the team and I was making my debut. And obviously, you know, I didn't have much time to sort of think about it because, you know, we were off to the ground pretty shortly after that. But I think, you know, as I've played more, I've definitely become more relaxed with everything, you know, with, you know, myself, my own game, what I need to do. You know, I'm still, when it's on, I'm still pretty up there intensity wise, I'd say, but I've definitely become more relaxed and, you know, almost as a player wanting those big moments to come your way, earning the right to get to that point in the game and say, yeah, this is, you know, this is where I can win us the game. I think that's quite a big motivator for me, and that comes through staying calm and staying relaxed and giving yourself the chance to assess and see what's in front of you and always having your eyes up, I suppose.
Playing for your country, what has been your favourite memory as a cricketer?
Again, I'm pretty spoiled. I think, you know, picking up my 50th cap at Eden Park in New Zealand was cool. You know, it's a nice milestone to get to, you know, by no means finished. Now I want to play as many games as I can for England, as does everyone. That's no secret. But I think that'd be up there. I think, you know, there's been some times in World Cups, probably the World Cup in the West Indies, you know, finishing that game off, not out against the West Indies, you know, obviously the home World Cup for them, massive support. You know, that was pretty big. Also, you know, going into that, the semi-final in Adelaide, you know, I took a catch and I didn't bat. I was batting three, and I never got in. That stand between Hales and Butler, that, you know, that was a cool moment, knocking the tournament favourites out and going to a final. And obviously, winning a World Cup, it doesn't get any better than that. So I've been pretty spoiled so far in my career, I'd say.
What is that feeling like when you do win a World Cup for your country?
Oh, obviously, you know, it's surreal. How do I put this? It's surreal, but it doesn't last too long. You'll always have it, but then
you're on to the next.
Exactly that sort of success. It obviously lasts in sport, but it doesn't last that long in the moment. In the moment, the ball's always moving. There's always something new to be onto, and you know that's a challenge. But you know, we're pretty lucky to say that's the challenge. It's always moving. You've always got the next thing to go on to. You've always got another way to get better, another area to improve. You know, that's probably the way I look at the game. You know, 12 months a year. You know, I don't want to be playing year round just for the sake of it. I want to be getting better and better and keep progressing and keep going on to the next thing. I think that's a big motivator of mine.
Sure. How do you really go about that? I mean, there's only, I guess, so much you can do when you're like on the go 24/7 jumping between tournament and tournament. How much do you have to really think about changing your game?
I think, you know, when you're proactive with that, it comes really easy. When you've got a lot of clarity in what you want to do and how you want to get there, sometimes it's really easy to pick out one or two things and say, I want to get better at this. You know, when it's not that clear cut, you need to trust the people around you. Maybe you need to, you know, ask someone that you trust, what do you think about this? How do I get better at improving? You know, oh, it could be any number of things. You know, it doesn't have to be just batting. Could be, you know, I could have a keeping focus for a month or 2 months, you know, whilst working on a couple of things in batting, where other times, you know, I might want to improve on something mid tournament. You know, I might put my weight into that instead of, you know, just constantly being ready for the game. So I think it's a constant moving picture, and it's almost like you have to see yourself, you know, almost have to look from the outside in on yourself sometimes and be quite, I don't know what the word is here, be emotionless with it. You know, if I was talking to myself as someone else, how would, you know, what would I think about this? How do I need to improve? Like that sort of a thing. Now, I've not put it the most eloquently there, but, you know, there's always an angle to drive at to make yourself a better player. And if you can do that and you can keep hanging the carrot in front of yourself, I think that's what keeps you fresh and that's what gives you, you know, consistency over long periods of time.
And I guess when you are playing for a variety of different teams all around the world, you're not with the same core group every time. It is really the you that is motivating you to succeed or change or do better. People might give you advice, but it's really on you to be the one to fix things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, the benchmark is obviously, you know, you can be a great cricketer yourself and you know, have good individual performances, and you know, if that's what motivates you, then cool. But I've always looked at it the way that the teams that I play for, you know, what does the outcome look like? And you don't want to be outcome focused, but I think it's a really solid thing to look back at. It's like, okay, then the teams that I play for, they're winning more games than they're losing. They're getting to better spots. I'm lifting trophies. I'm helping the team do that. I think it's, you know, I don't want to be outcome focused, but it's always really good to get through a tournament and then look back and think, okay, how has that happened? How did I help create that situation? How did I drive that? Do I need to be doing more from, you know, a team point of view? I think when you look at it like that, you get a pretty good idea of where you're at.
You've had not a bad track record over the last little bit of winning. No wonder you're retained by RCB.
I don't know what to say to that. I don't know how to answer that.
Just give me a little pat on the shoulder. All right, it's time for a quick word with our sponsors. Don't go anywhere. Phil Storey will be back with you soon. You got a favourite on tour story, like a moment with the boys that you'll never forget? It'll go down in history in the dressing room.
That's a good question. I don't think I've got any one memory in particular, but I've got a lot of small memories.
You can give me a few. We got time.
I think, again, it's Tim David related. I think there was a moment after training. Yeah, I think that there was a moment after training where I don't know how he did it, but he just made half the team sort of break out and dance to the speaker, stuff like that. And it's not a good memory because it was funny, which it was, but it was because the team, you could see very clearly in that moment early on in the competition that we had a team that was pulling for each other. And I think that that's quite a big thing in cricket, because it's such an sort of individual team sport. I think you can get a lot of guys going a fraction insular. I think those moments arise where, you know, it's a 50-50 call where the guys retreat into the shell or whether they, you know, double down and come out a bit harder. And I think it's always easier to go the other way when a team, you know, pulling for the man next to you. And I think, you know, moments like that, I think where it becomes immediately obvious that you're pulling for the man next year, I think that's when you know as a player you've got something good going on.
Absolutely. And especially when you're, you know, going from tournament to tournament again and you might not have played with these people before, it is nice to have those characters within the group that do bond and gel everyone together. Because at the end of the day, you might not know when you need to be bonded, and the more bonded you are in comparison to the rest, happy days.
Yeah, exactly that. That's a consistency I've seen with all the good teams that I've played in. You've always got those guys, you know, creating those moments, and you've always got a team that are willing to do it for the bloke next to him.
Abu Dhabi T10 is just ahead of you. What are you looking forward to this tournament? Any key players you're looking forward to you know, playing with again or playing against?
I think I'd honestly say all of my team. I think there's a lot of guys, you go through our batting lineup, that the guys when you play against them, they come out and you go, oh, not him, sort of a thing.
Yeah.
I think that's the best way to put it. I'm pretty excited to see where we can go and what we can do in this tournament. You know, we've got a lot of guys, you know, with a lot of experience, you know, Kieran Pollard. You know, I've been coached by him before and I've played against him a lot, but I don't think I've ever played with him. So I'm looking forward to playing with him this year and seeing what he can do, because obviously, you know, his batting speaks for itself and all the rest of it. But, you know, he's got the armband as well. And I think there could be some lessons for me to take off him.
Absolutely. Oh, how good would that be? T10, I mean, it's becoming more and more prevalent. Each year there's more and more tournaments that seem to be popping up. Do you enjoy the shorter format?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a tournament where I've done my most improving over the years. I think with the sort of condensed game, I think you're always in a pressure moment, whether it's facing your first ball, second ball, third ball, trying to get a boundary away and put the pressure back on. You know, if you're setting a total, if you're chasing a total, there's not many times where you're going to get, you know, 2 weeks of opportunities to work on those in-game moments as much as you do here. I think they're a lot fewer and far between in T20 cricket. And, you know, you never know how people view the tournament. You know, some people might think it's brilliant. Some people might think, oh, it's too short. But honestly, as a player, you get exposure to a lot more of those moments here than you do anywhere else. And, you know, I really like coming out here with the view to improving on that, you know, because obviously, the more you do it, the better at it you're going to be.
Do you think the T10 format helps in your play, how you play T20? Or do you really see them as two entirely different strategies in terms of gameplay?
I think for myself, obviously, you know, they are different. This, you got to be in fifth gear a lot more of the time. But I think, you know, for myself in T20 cricket and sort of where I'm at, and, you know, my sort of where my USP is getting those quick starts consistently. I think this tournament does lend itself to doing that and getting better at that, more importantly. I know that whenever I've gone to T20 in the past after T10, I've felt like I've had bags of time, which is, you know, quite a big thing. I think, you know, you always want to feel like you have time, and this tournament does create that for me when I go back to T20 cricket. So I really enjoy playing in it from that point of view, yeah.
Who's the scariest bowler you've ever faced?
The scariest?
Who have you been absolutely shitting yourself facing?
I don't think I was shitting myself with Sean Tate, but I played against him when I was quite new on the scene. I think I must have been 18 or 19.
Yeah.
And he looked very angry at the top of his mark, and he was making some horrible noises. Like, you know, I was at the non-strikers end.
What was he making?
Oh, just a lot of grunting, and, you know, like a bit like a wild animal. and he let go of the ball with the biggest grunt, and I was at the non-strikers end. I thought, Christ.
Is this an animal or a bowler?
Yeah, who is this? And then I got on strike first ball. And, you know, I had a choice to make in that moment. My first ball I faced of him, I ran at him and sort of hit the inside half, and I got through for one at mid on. But then again, he looked at me as if to say, "What's this kid playing at? Like, who is this guy?"
Have you got any crazy sledging stories? Any sledges that are really stuck with you?
Oh, nothing that I can repeat on here.
No, fair enough. Yeah. I mean, half the stuff that my dad said, I mean, honestly, I don't even want to know.
Yeah, I love it. I like a good story about your dad. Specifically the one with JL when he was chirping Shoaib Akhtar.
Yeah.
You know,
Those two, honestly, at each other 24/7. Did you hear the one where he was kind of feeling flat one day, apparently? It might have been in Oz, some tour against Pakistan. And your dad walks out of the change room, sees Shoaib Akhtar and goes, something to rile him up. And he goes, "Shush, Haydos," or something. That's the PG version. Anyway, dad comes in like real happy with himself, like, "Yes, I riled him up." And then they're at each other at the crease, honestly.
I think that's the one. That's so funny. I love that.
Just so rogue. Just feeling a bit flat. I'm just going to stir the pot a little bit, rile myself up, rile him up, and then here we go. Activated.
Yeah, I love that. I do like it. I do like it when batters have a word with the bowler. That you know, you don't often see it that way, but I do find that very funny when that happens.
It's so good. Honestly, I wish they got rid of stump marks sometimes and let you boys just have your little on-field moments.
Yeah, you know what? That is one thing I completely agree with. You know, it's a game that's filled with emotion, as is all professional sport. You know, and I was fined in Australia for missing a ball once and saying something. Yeah, I think it might have been the F word. I'm hoping it wasn't the C word, but it's my memory.
Slip of the tongue.
Yeah, and the match ref came in after the game and did me to the tune of $5,000 or something.
Oh,
I remember thinking, we're playing professional sports here. Like, nobody's a choir boy, and you should be allowed to show emotion. Imagine sticking it on football players running around with a microphone on them.
Well, exactly. They'd be in deep trouble.
Yeah, and then finding them for it. So, well, I think there's a balance to be struck. I don't know if they get rid of them or turn them down, but then again, I think the punter sat at home, you know, likes it when they hear something like that. You do get the odd funny moment out of them. So I don't know. As long as I don't get fined.
Yeah, exactly. As long as they don't take your cash, you're happy. You'd have to be particularly careful being so close to the stumps at most times of play, being a keeper and then batter at the same time. You'd have to just keep tape in your mouth.
That's it. I'm pretty sure they turn them up as well when I'm behind the stump.
Oh, they just know you're a little bit of a firecracker.
which doesn't help, because obviously, you know, you're not making noise for no reason. You more often than not, you're trying to make the batter think about something, or you know, there's quite often there's a game within a game there. You know, it doesn't work on everyone, and you don't try it with everyone, but you every now and again you get a candy. You say, I know that he'll rise to this, or I know that if I say this, he'll go one way or the other with it. And you know, sometimes it can help getting people back into the shell, and other times, you know, if you feel like the game's in a bit of a spot where, you know, the batter might have to gamble, you might talk that up, and you might get a shot that out of them that they wouldn't have played otherwise. So there's definitely, you know, a bit of a craft to that, I'd say.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I was talking to Glenn McGrath the other day. I hosted an event with him, and he was telling me a story. Dad, again, honestly, that guy. It was a game against West Indies, and Brian Lara was heading out to bat. Anyway, or he was batting or something, and everyone said, Matt, don't say anything to Brian. Like, don't say anything. Of course, this guy walks over, chirp, chirp, chirp in the old ear. And everyone goes, oh, no. Oh, no. And he was one of those ones that loved when someone chirps at you and just 100 and won the game for them. And they're all like, it's your fault, Matt.
Yeah.
We told you not to.
Yeah. Sounds right.
Yeah. Do you have anyone that you learned the hard lesson of, oh God, probably shouldn't have chirped that guy. He took that way too seriously, and now he's had a win.
No, I remember there was a first class game where I got called in to do 12 man for, and Chris Nash was at short leg, and he got hit. I think it was a drag down from one of the spinners, and he pulled it straight into his helmet, and he's gone off for a concussion check. I think he got concussed or something like that. And I had to go on and field short leg for the rest of the day. And he's one of my good mates now. I did a bit of work with him out in Adelaide, but Mark Cosgrove, I remember the senior lads were sort of egging me on. And, you know, at that point, I was a young lad, and I started saying a few things to him. And I remember another drag down off the spinner. It wasn't a good idea for me after what just happened. And I remember him hitting a ball straight between my legs, and I felt the ball just skim me. And then he sort of walked down the other end, walking backwards to the non-striker's end, just spraying me. And I remember thinking I could be in for a long afternoon here if he keeps batting. But I think luckily CJ nicked him off at some point in the next half an hour. Yeah, thank God for that.
Saved you. Oh, how good. Don't go anywhere. We'll be back with the final whistle to wrap up the episode. Let's move to the last part of the podcast. It's called The Final Whistle. I'm going to ask you a few quick questions again. And, you know, you can just, they're quick fire. So just shoot them at me.
Yeah.
Let's do it. What's something you've changed your mind about in sports recently?
I don't know if I've changed my mind about it, but in the last couple of weeks of the rugby, I'm not enjoying this sort of the rules around contact to the head. We've seen some soft yellows and reds in the last couple of weeks watching rugby. So, no, not a fan. Especially not with the one that was, I think it might have been recalled in the end. But in the Ireland All Blacks game, I don't think that's the one.
You know what? I'm not enjoying rugby full stop at the moment. That's a big call, but I just love league. Do you guys follow league over in England, NRL?
Not really the NRL. A little bit Super League. A few of the Wigan boys came down to Manchester a couple of years ago, and they had a go in the Nets, Harry Smith being one of them. So I watch what he's up to, give him a shout every now and again, but I've got to say I prefer Union.
Yeah, I just like the fast-pacedness of league in comparison to union. I feel like union can be a little bit slow.
Yeah, that's what all the Aussies say.
Like, just be a bit slow. You know, a lot of waiting around. I'm like, boys, get up. Come on. I'm used to like sixes and fours every 3 seconds. Give me a bit of excitement, would you?
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Alrighty. What's the best piece of advice you've ever gotten from a coach?
I think an interesting one is I had a chat with a coach this morning and he said, you don't know what you don't know. I think it's good. It's good to remind. It sounds really simple. It's good to remind yourself of that every now and again. You're going to keep making, you know, the odd mistake here, and you're going to keep having the odd win there. It's one of those, but you just got to keep going with it and keep learning every day. I think that's the message.
Can't control the uncontrollables. That's a good one.
That one. Yeah.
What's one piece of advice that you'd give to a younger player today?
I'd say actually it's what I remind myself of a lot is just if you just keep getting better and you focus on improving yourself and taking yourself to the, you know, the next sort of step in your progression, I think it will take care of itself. I think that's the main one, not to get too far ahead of yourself. You know, you're never as high as you think you are, and the lows are never as low as you think they are. So I think that's a massive one. Just keep focusing on self-improvement and how you can get better and how you can impact more games, and the cards will fall as they may.
What's one cricket moment you wish you could relive?
Probably winning that IPL final with RCB. I think that was a big one. I would say the World Cup final, but I didn't. I watched all but the last two balls from downstairs because we got the partnership and I didn't allow myself to move. So I don't think I'd want to relive that. It was me and Mark Wood down there, and Wokesy was down there for the majority as well until he had to get his pads on.
Yeah, you were just down and out. You were like, nah.
Was it Wokesy? Yeah, someone was down there with me and Woody just putting our nerves about the play.
I love it. So good. What's your go-to karaoke song? Or if you don't have a go-to, what's one that you'd like to have a little sing-along to?
It'd have to be anything by Oasis.
Yeah, good call.
A slow one. Probably a slow one. Probably Half the World Away. Probably a slow one.
Mm. Want to give us a little karaoke now?
Absolutely not.
No, we need a couple of beers. We need to do that. Okay, if you could swap lives, this is the last question for you. If you could swap lives with any athlete for a day, who would it be?
Can I say Tim David?
Romance or something going on between you two? Yeah. What's going on behind the scenes?
I've not seen him in a while, and just being around in the last couple of days here, honestly, I've not stopped laughing. He's full of it. So I'd like to know the real inner workings of that head, you know, how those
really
thoughts come about.
Behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Behind the noggin.
Yeah.
Love it. Oh, well, thank you so much for your time. Really enjoyed chatting to you. Good luck for this tournament that you're about to head into. But yeah, again, really appreciate your time. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me on.
Well, that's it for this episode of Game On with Grace. I hope you loved this conversation. Make sure you hit the follow button, subscribe, and tell all your friends about this podcast, because there's so many more epic guests to come, hilarious debates, big stories. So stay tuned. I'm Grace Hayden, and until next time, keep competitive.